Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the latest Socially Distant Rogue Report podcast, brought to you once again from the comfort of our homes. I'm your host Craig, and joining me this morning for a remote catch-up is a very special guest. It's former Sunderland captain, George Honeyman. George, great to have you back on the show for your second appearance.
Thank you very much.
Always the way that we're starting these podcasts, and quite rightly so. Is everyone okay there? All happy and healthy in the Honeyman household?
Everyone's absolutely sound, luckily enough. Apart from obviously the keeping sane, but everyone's fit and healthy, so that's the main thing at the minute. So yeah, all good news in that department.
So how have you been spending your days since football come to an end back in March?
At first, because it was so near the end of the season, you kind of use the first couple of weeks as a little break. Obviously, you didn't realise how long the layoff was going to be, but we had like a week off, and I spent it most of the time on a golf course, and then quickly things turned about that wasn't going to come back anytime soon. So more just purely out of staying sane, I'd be using it as a fitness camp really. And then the online quizzes, that everything that everyone else has been doing that as much as possible as well, just because there's nothing else really to do in there. I think my dogs have been walked to the ground like at the minute, but I've actually been all right, to be honest, and especially because I was back up in the northeast. Luckily enough, as I say, when the games got called off on that Friday, we got like a week off. So I went back up to the northeast and I was actually staying at my mum's for a couple of days. And when the whole lockdown thing came about, I was kind of like, oh, well, I'll just stay here with my mum. So it's actually been quite nice how it's turned out.
Well, that's been all right then, I suppose, especially with being surrounded by, kind of family members back up here. I suppose at least you haven't been isolated back down in Hull. I imagine the novelty of the quizzes and things like that are probably wearing its course now, is that right?
Very much wearing thin now. Like, it's like, oh, I'm just sick of talking to people through a screen. But I suppose at least we've got that. I wouldn't want to imagine this 20 years ago when there was nothing else. So I suppose we're lucky in that department. But I very much wearing thin the quizzes now.
So you're not back in training as of yet. The Paps looking to schedule something maybe later in the month at the start of the June period. Is there anything planned from Hull for when they want you back in? Or
So the EFL guidelines is 25th of May now. So up until Thursday this week, we're supposed to be in on Monday. So I'd kind of plan to come back down on the weekend. But obviously that's been pushed back a week again. But it still doesn't feel like that's set in stone either, because I think there's, from what I read anyway, I'm just reading what everyone else is reading on Sky Sports News and stuff, that there's a lot still to be agreed on. I've honestly got no clue what's going to happen, because you and me both probably reading a different thing every day, thinking, absolutely, oh yeah, that's going to happen. And then you read something else, you think, oh well, it's not going to happen. So who knows? I'm just keeping in the mindset that it's gonna happen. Keep myself nice and fit. And then if it doesn't, it doesn't.
What are your thoughts on it? I mean, perhaps expect maybe a mixture of excitement, happy to go back and play football, but maybe a bit of trepidation, bit of worry, bit of anxiety about, just making sure you do the right things.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's like anything. It feels like I've had an off season and I'm desperate to get back now. But for the first couple of weeks, I was ready for that break. Now I'm like, I'm raring to go. I want to get back in. But I live by myself down here. And I think one thing with it is, if I had a wife and kids, or I live with my mum or what have you, and I was going into work, I'm close contact with other people and come back home, that's when I think I'd be a bit, I'm not keen on this, because if I ever passed anything on or what have you, I'd be absolutely mortified. So, a lot of the lads do have partners and kids and people staying with them. So if I was them, then I'd probably be feeling about it a different way. Whereas it's just me. So, and you kind of, because I'm in that bracket 25, you kind of rightly or wrongly think, oh, well, I should be okay with it. Yeah. That's not always the case as we've seen, but you're thinking that the odds are in my favor. So it's a tough one. And whatever happens, no one's going to be happy. There's always going to be upset parties, but I think everyone's got to be sensible with it, and it can only return if we're doing absolutely everything for people's safety. Because as it's been mentioned by like various pundits, obviously there's a lot being talked about at the minute. It just takes one thing to go horrendously wrong, and you know, look back and be like, what were we thinking doing that?
Absolutely. Well, fingers crossed when if and when it's going to be this month that that everything goes according to plan. I know obviously the Bundesliga returned yesterday, so
if
we can maybe follow the measures. Oh, I was going to say, if we can follow maybe the measures they've put in place, that might likely have a good bit of influence on the Premier League and the AFL going forward.
Yeah, I think it's nice that, isn't it? They're going to have a little look at how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And we're a couple of weeks behind, and hopefully we can implement something like that.
Did he pick a team to follow yesterday? Did he catch any of it?
No, I just caught a bit of the Dortmund game against Schalke. I actually haven't picked a team. I never really picked teams, to be honest. I just found it bizarre because it's kind of, obviously with the empty stadiums and that, it doesn't feel real. It's like, the sport's really now without the fans. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're thinking if that was the case all the time, like, people would go off it quickly. Like, do you know what I mean? It needs the atmosphere in the stadiums. It needs all that. But obviously, that is impossible at the minute. But I just mean in general terms, it needs that because it's pretty dull without it.
Yeah, it had the hallmarks of like a pre-season game a little bit yesterday, didn't it? But it's something to fill the void.
Yeah, exactly. It's better than nothing. We've got to be grateful for it.
So, George, as I said at the top of the show, this is your second appearance on the podcast. Yeah. When we last spoke with you back in March 2019, we were just days away from a really, really big week for us, beginning with the Checker Trade semi-final, which was a fairly routine win down at Bristol Rovers. But a few days later, it was an all-out battle at Wycombe Wanderers. You were substituted midway through the second half for Duncan Watmore, who eventually scored the equaliser for us. Then within the next few minutes, it went absolutely mad. You were sent off along with Nathan Tyson and Marcus Bean from Wycombe. Talk me through what happened and what kind of triggered it, because I mean they were really at us all day long.
I think anyone who was at the game, like, they were, I mean, I've heard it's kind of their style, you know, that's harsh to Wycombe, but obviously they spent the afternoon trying to get under our skin, and evidently it worked, you know what I mean? But it was just kind of, it was a weird afternoon. The whole day was weird, to be honest. How, like, when we were greeted, obviously Luke was going back, and like the receptions, the way they were treating him, obviously it was frustration on our part, because, you know, we're wanting to win every game, and they were making it very, very hard for us. And yeah, it was just one of those games where you just thought, you know what, they're like doing everything they can to get under our skin and to make things difficult. And it worked, obviously, because we were really amped up at the end, myself included. Basically, my sending off was the ball coming over to the sideline, and Cookie, our kit man, went to get it and throw it back on quickly, because at that point, I think we're still 2-1 down. And one of their coaches came over and pushed Cookie, or grabbed the ball out his hand or something. Like, I can't remember the exact instant, but I was already riled up. And then I seen that they pushed Cookie. So then I went over, pushed him. I mean, it was nothing really. It's typical football handbag.
Yeah,
but handbags. Like, at the time, you're thinking, you know, you want to lay them all out. But I felt pretty confident with a mass Sunderland fans there that if it did go into a mass brawl, that we're going to be okay. But yeah, basically, the ball went over to Cookie. He went to get it. One of their staff pushed him. So I ran over, kind of, out of my frustration, out of wanting to have Cookie's back, to, you know, the whole day had been an annoyance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about it. And then it just erupted into a mass brawl. And then our sports scientist, like, grabbed me after a couple of minutes and put me back on the bench. And he got like a couple of other lads to like stand in front of me to like hide me from the ref. And for like a minute, we all thought it would work. Like the ref was thinking, oh, where's he gone or whatever? But no, it didn't work. He pulled us over and sent us off. And I just remember going down the tunnel and then a couple of their players trying to chase us. But there was like 100 people in between us. I'm thinking, yeah, good one, Macy. You're like, you're trying to give it that you're chasing me and there's about 100 people in between us. And then people are telling me that Akin Fenmore was doing pull-ups on the bench and all that. And I'm thinking, that's just some of the deal. Embarrassing.
It was a funny one coming out of the ground because, I mean, obviously you've got the excitement of getting back into us, making sure that we didn't get beat. And then with what's happened, everyone's, like you said, pushing and shoving. So we all come up, we're all hyped out. And then I think it was about half an hour later where people are actually having this, you know, kind of reality there going, oh, Christ, George has been sent off. He's going to miss the Checker Trade final. I know, obviously, the way it all transpired, it worked well, but I imagine you must have been sat devastated when the penny had dropped thinking you were going to miss out.
Basically, I got back into the change room. Obviously, my temperature was still really high and I wasn't really thinking about how else, but apart from what had just happened. And then about 5 minutes later, I'm just pacing the shower room at the minute. And I start thinking, oh my God, it's Wembley. And I think it was two games. I think it was one league game and then Wembley or something like that.
It worked out funny, I think, because the Fleetwood game was rearranged due to international call-ups.
There might be two games in between. Yeah. But anyway, it was a third one. And the realisation starts hitting me and thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna miss the Czech trade. I'm going to miss the Wembley game. And, you know, I start getting upset then because I'm thinking, you absolute idiot. Like, what a price to pay for missing your Wembley game, going and pushing, like, just losing your cool, do you know what I mean? Just absolutely losing any composure. And, yeah, I'm basically just pacing, and I'm trying to think of all the scenarios of what, is it a one-game ban, is it a three-game ban, kind of, like, what is the crack with the Checker trade, is it the right competition?
Yeah.
And basically, by the end of it, I'm thinking, like, I've pretty much companies you've got to accept, like, you're going to miss it here. And we haven't won the game. I've just been sent off and now I'm missing check. I was pretty heartbroken leaving that ground. Also, the fact that I forgot is obviously it was Duncan's first game back and he scored the equaliser and they took him out and
clattered him
and took his ankle away. And I was thinking that was just another thing on top of it, thinking, like, you know, hated that game, hated the way that everything was carried on. And I just remember being on the bus and our club secretary used to travel the games. And I remember him saying something to us about, like, I'll get all the clarification from the EFL on Monday. He said something like, I'm sure it doesn't count in the Checker trade or something like that. He chucked me a little bit of rope.
Yeah, a bit of a lifeline.
He gave me a little bit of hope. But it was one of those where I was just like, kind of, oh no, like, if he's giving me this bit of hope and it comes back in my face again, I'm going to be even more upset the next time. Because now I can't help but start thinking, oh my God, am I actually going to be all right? Am I going to play? For the next week or two, I can't remember how long it was, but I was just charging in the upstairs office, the back room staff, just saying, have we heard anything? What's the crack? Blah, blah, blah. And by each day, it kind of looked more and more likely that I was going to play. So my hopes were well and truly building. And then obviously I got the great news and it was, I just remember thinking how unbelievably lucky I was. It was basically a loophole. Let's not beat around the bush. Do you know what I mean? Like, realistically, I probably shouldn't have been allowed to play. But it was kind of this loophole because it was a Checker trade. But I was a very, very lucky man at that. And yeah, forever count me blessings that I got the chance to do it.
You know, for something that people, I think, on the outside look at it and think, oh, it's a bit of a, like, a tin pot Mickey Mouse cup. I mean, we really got into the hype of it all, didn't we? If I think of when, you know, the team arriving at King's Cross that weekend for the Checker trade final, did you have any idea what you were going to receive in terms of the welcome you did? It was just a complete wall of noise that escorted you all off the train and up the platform.
I think we kind of got a sense because we got the train from Durham. Mm-hmm. And obviously the hype before the week, like, we were getting suits done for the final and stuff. And you're thinking that this isn't no, like, yeah, okay, it is at the earlier stages, you know what I mean, with the 23s teams and all that. Of course it is. But when you're in a Wembley final against Portsmouth, and you know all the tickets are sold out, you're thinking, hang on, this is going to be some occasion, this. But yeah, with that moment where we stepped off at King's Cross, that was proper hairs stand up on the back of your neck. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, that's the kind of stuff you want to, like, see, like, bottle up, and if you could save it in a little bottle, that would be like, you'd be able to sell that for whatever money you want. It was something that'll live with you for the rest of your life, that, because I just remember looking around and some of the boys who'd only been here for a year and maybe not realized how big a club Sunderland was or what have you. Not that people don't realize, but anyone who comes from the outside in, I think they always get took back by actually, like, how big it is in terms of how passionate the fans are and how many fans there are. Obviously, everyone can see from the outside, or big stadium, blah, 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 being in the Premier League for years. But until you're actually there, you don't realise the weight of it all. And I just remember looking at some of the boys' faces when we got back on the bus, like, which is literally parked right next to King's Cross. Normally, it's about a 30-second walk onto the bus when you get the train. And it must have took us 5-10 minutes just because of the amount of people there. And I just remember looking around thinking, like, if that doesn't make them get where they are. And you can tell people are starting to realise, thinking, this is special. And yeah, that 5 minutes or whatever was some of the best 5 minutes I've had in football.
Were you following the scenes on, like, social media the night before, Trafalgar Square, Covent Garden?
It was impossible
like that?
Not to. Just because I obviously had mates and that down there as well, and they were just sending me the videos, like, in Trafalgar Square. And I'm thinking, half of you are thinking, like, looks like a cracking party, that. I want to be there. But it also makes you think, like, better perform tomorrow. Like, there's some serious expectation here. Like, don't want to let these down. Like, it was just... The scenes from Trafalgar Square and stuff, obviously all the videos, the photos, it just made you so immensely proud to be part of the club. It was like, do you know, it was like, I am so proud to be part of this club right now. Like, everyone you could play for, it's like, I don't think you'd choose many above this club.
The day itself, like you said, pretty much nigh on a sellout, 85,000 people. And you think of some of the lads who've led Sunderland out of Wembley in the past: Rich Carter, Bobby Kerr, Barry Venison, Benno, Brace, Bawley, John O'Shea. What's it like when you're stood in that tunnel, knowing that you're going to lead them out basically to a cauldron of noise? Is that nerves? Do you just soak it in, enjoy the moment?
Yeah, it's weird because it's just so emotional. I just found myself being so emotional. I was thinking, oh my God, just keep a straight face and, like, just focus on the game. It was just, I think the whole can't help falling in love in the warm-up as well. Like, it was just all, like, so emotional. But I just kept telling myself, like, this is all amazing, but you've got to make sure you perform for them. Like, this is all nothing if you go have a stinking game here. Do you know what I mean? But it was really hard to keep your emotions in check, because I must have had about, you know, 40 people there, or what have you. The packed Wembley, first time at Wembley. The singing, can't help falling in love with you there. I'm leaning them out. It was just all so surreal and, like, impossible for me to appreciate at the time. As much as emotional on that I was, even I look now and I'm thinking, oh my God, did that actually happen? Like, that was just so bizarre. But yeah, the overriding emotion for me was like, I've got to make sure that we're on it. Yeah, because, like, it's an awful lot of people to let down if we don't perform or win, which obviously we'll get to, which obviously happened.
Well, you mentioned about turning up, and I think that in a sense it's the most important thing. And to play in the manner that we did for the first half, I mean, incredible tempo. We deservedly lead at the break, courtesy of an absolute worldie from Aidan McGeady.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it was a bit of a funny one. Portsmouth come out a completely different side, and, you know, they began to dominate large portions of the rest of the game. Why do you think it was, as they, you know, grew in confidence, that we couldn't perhaps rise to meet it? Do you think it's just a case of we'd burnt ourselves out somewhat in the first half, or is it nerves kind of setting
possibly
in?
Possibly. I mean, as you say, our first half, you look back at that, and it probably... one of our best performances in a half all season. Like,
absolutely,
we were absolutely brilliant first half, and it was weird. The feeling at half time is kind of like, maybe we were just too overconfident. Maybe we thought, yeah, like, Jesus, we played unbelievable there, we're gonna go on and win it. And you know, give Portsmouth due like they did all season. They stuck about and they came back at us really hard. And I think maybe it was one of those things in footy that because we played so well in the first half and then we haven't had to take a back step all game, suddenly we come out second half and we're up against it a bit. And it's just kind of like the old football word momentum. Like,
yeah,
once a team gets on top of you, and then obviously we've done unbelievable to drag it to extra time in the end. And you're thinking, well, they're still being the better team all second half. But yeah, it was weird because on the pitch it was feeling like that as well. I can't remember if they changed formation or what, but it was like playing a different team the second half. And games like that, people are going to react differently. It's not as easy if you make a mistake just forgetting about it when there's 90,000 people there. And do you know what I mean? So if you start getting under the cosh, it's probably a bit harder to turn things around when you've got 45,000 of Pompey fans going wild in the second half. I think obviously that's a big difference when the team's up and down at Wembley. At first half, they're probably feeling the wall of Sunderland fans there, thinking up against it. Second half, they've come out, started brightly, and their fans have got G'd up. And then all of a sudden, then it almost feels like an away game for us because like you can only hear the Pompey fans. But that's just how it goes at Wembley. It's
of course
split down the middle. Whoever's on top, it's going to be the loudest, aren't they?
Talk me through the emotions of like the last 5 minutes of extra time, because nobody does back and forth up and down like Sunderland did there. I mean, so they take the lead, and then out of nowhere, you know, we pile everybody forward. Aidan McGeady manages to scramble the ball over the line. I'll be honest, I can't even begin to explain the relief and the noise of the people around me. I've got people diving over rows just celebrating and went nuts. I've still got scars up my legs from it. And that's like my war marks from that day. Talk me through that last 5 minutes.
Right, so they was it was it the lad Law, was it his Law, chips over John? And obviously still at this point we haven't really got going again since the first half, and you're kind of thinking it's not long left. I don't know if I asked what time was, but you're thinking we've not been at it, we just need to chuck people forward here because we're not going to all of a sudden click and our plane and get back it. And it was a warm day, and I just remember looking around and I think we're all on our last legs here. Like, we'd already played a lot of footy in the season. It was like, how emotional it was in extra time. You're thinking, this is the most draining match of my life. But then, obviously, in a typical Sunderland way, and the way that team was that year, just never realising when they beat. Mm-hmm. I just remember the ball coming in, and Aidan's to me left, and it falls to him. And, you know, with the feet he's got and the composure he had, he sort of chopped it away from the lad and then snuck it into the bottom corner. And just when that ball hit the back of the net, as you see, I remember wanting to, like, scream and run, but, like, legs were just so heavy. Like, I don't even think Aidan was running that fast away, but no one seemed to be able to catch him because we were just that drained. But it was just, like, I imagine it was just like what a boxer feels like. It felt like I'd done about 20 rounds with Tyson at that point, because you're just thinking, oh my, it was just the pure emotion of it.
Yeah.
Of like thinking, oh, we're down, oh, we're back. But like when they scored, it was, as I say, I had a great feeling with that team last year where it was like, we never knew when we were beaten. Like at no point when we were down did I ever think, oh, this is like, it's done. But just, yeah, I think to top off an even more emotional day for that to go in, and then obviously for the penalties, it was just a really bizarre day. But yeah, at that point you're thinking we're gonna win the pen shootout because definitely. They must be so deflated. That I just remember everything that, so half time, full time, at the end, I just kept thinking we're gonna win. Like I just kept it in my head thinking, like, first off, right, they've been battered. Like, we're on top. Like, we're going to finish this out. End of extra time, you're thinking, right, well, they've done their work in the second half. We're going to pounce on them in extra time now. End of extra time, thinking, we've just equalised last second. We're going into pens. There's no way they're going to be able to take the pens. You know what I mean? I just kept telling myself that, no, this is going to be our day.
Is the penalties predetermined? Is that done, you know, days in advance, or is that on the day, basically hands up who wants to take one?
It was predetermined in the week because we'd been practicing pens all week.
Yeah.
But obviously there's like a couple of different ones if, I don't know, if someone was off and someone came up. Do you know what I mean? There's always a list, but it wasn't a hands up it was we went into huddle and the manager chose the pens. Obviously, after the game, I think I got a lot of stick because I didn't take a pen. And, you know, looking at it, of course, I was captain, midfielder. Yeah, I would want to take a pen and probably I should have been more against the manager and being like, no, Gaff, I want to take a pen. But at that time, it just didn't feel right in my head to start causing friction before a pen shootout. But maybe that's just the way I was. Maybe I just wasn't enough of a, how do I put it? I think my whole sort of mantra as a captain or whatever was just trying to have peace and easy going and everyone to get on. So
yeah,
that probably escalated into the whole pens. And when the five were announced, I was like, well, one of those now. And after it, I'm thinking people asking us why. And to be honest, my record at pens from when I've been in the academy at Sunderland in the various tournaments we've played has always been shocking. Like, I'm not going to beat around bush. Even when it was 18s, playing as a 16 in the sort of league final against Fulham, missed a pen in a checker trade. So it was never a case of I'm a mint pen taker.
Yeah.
I want to take it. It was more just the fact like, oh, I'm captain. I should be taking one. But when the manager made his choice, it was like, well, I've not really got anything to back it up apart from that I've got the armband on. Do you know what I mean? So if we win the pen shootout, I don't think anyone says out, but we lost it. And sort of that's what magnifying glass was on, which is fair enough. Someone's got to take the flack, and, you know, rightly so. Like, if I was looking at something and the captain didn't take a pen, I'd be like, something was up there. Do you know what I mean? But that was the full of it. And it was just one of those where at the time, I'm not even really thinking about, oh, I should be taking a pen. It was just kind of, we had our five best penalty takers. There you go.
So sadly, it felt to Cats to be the only one not to score from the spot. Did he need much consoling afterwards?
Listen, anyone in that situation is going to be absolutely gutted, aren't they?
Yeah.
But to be honest, he was okay, because I think we all sort of accepted, like, as great as that day was, on the night time, we all sort of came together and were like, right, that was a great day, but at the end of the day, our one aim this year was to get promoted. Like,
mm-hmm.
If that was the playoff final, I think it would have been a lot. He was obviously upset, do you know what I mean? But I think everyone as a collective after it was kind of like, right, we've got something else to focus on. It wasn't like the last game of the season, the playoff final, and, do you know, that's a totally different scenario, that. But obviously, for a couple hours after, he was upset. But, you know, Katz is a strong bloke, you know, he can deal with a lot of things, and again, he dealt with that great, considering if there was one player that you think probably didn't deserve for that to happen to him, it was him. But so life goes.
Well, as you mentioned, it's about, you know, kind of reacting and responding and how you basically grow from that. In the following week, we'll go to Accrington, we'll win comfortably, we then go to Rochdale, somewhat nervy, we'll come from behind and you score the winner in the last minute. And we're then level with second place Barnsley. We've got two games in hand. Confidence is absolutely sky high. Again, it's another ground I remember coming out of, and straight away already I'm like, right, we're promoted. But Sunderland kind of do what Sunderland do best.
Crazy. Like, when you look back at that position we were in, I'm thinking, how the hell did we not get promoted?
It's one out of our final seven games that we won, and there was defeats in there. I mean, Southend, we had Fleetwood. These are games that traditionally that season we hadn't lost.
I think
we
wouldn't lose. The Fleetwood game on this. Was it Southend? We were already in the playoffs. Was that
the
season? Yeah. I think the Fleetwood game was the big one, like, from what I remember.
Do you think, in terms of obviously the way it went, though, was it the case of, you know, we played that much football, or was it the case of we're just, you know, without sort of, you know, singling anybody out, could we not say deal with the pressure? Because we had such an upper hand, and then we've got the Burton game where we draw at home, and the Coventry game. I mean, by God, for anyone wanting to relive that, I mean,
God,
we'd never see a game like that for another 30 years.
It was a bizarre game, wasn't it? Looking back, I think it was probably a mix of them all. We played a lot of footy by then, like with the checker trade in there as well, the emotion of all that. And to be honest, I didn't feel like there was a massive hangover from it, though, from losing the final. I didn't feel like, oh, we've started feeling sorry for ourselves or anything like that. But I think we just kind of got into a, away from what we'd been doing really well in the first half of the season. We were just trying to find, like, instead of like concentrating on maybe our performance and letting the result take care of itself, we were kind of like trying to force results in, maybe.
Yeah.
Which it's hard to sort of like get out of that trend because the games come thick and fast. It's hard to take a step back and realise what's actually going wrong because we were playing like Saturday, Tuesday. It was just all so relentless and it all of a sudden starts snowballing. And you know what it's like at Sunderland, once we went one, it was all of a sudden we didn't win for three and then things start getting chaotic. And I think 100% there would have been players or what have you feeling pressure. And just because it's the nitty gritty bit of the season. It's the part that really matters. And yeah, you probably say we've been one of, if not the best team in the league up in that, to that point. But if you don't finish it off, you're not going to get promoted. And I think like a few things, like at that point in the season, we had a lot of people carrying injuries like anyone would. And maybe people were playing that weren't fit and stuff like that. Like, for example, Aiden had a sore foot.
That's right, yeah.
And he wasn't training. He was playing on Saturday. And you're thinking, you know, how long can he carry that on for? Is he fully fit? But he wasn't what the only one. There was a load of us. I was playing at times with only training once because I had a sore knee and stuff. And you're thinking, this is great because we're trying to keep the team and all that together. But is this the best for the team going forward? But it's tough. It's impossible to know at the time because you sort of stick with a way of how you're going to do it and you follow the manager and us as players go together as one. But from that position, we just felt so... The thing that always will bug at me is just that we felt so good. At no point did I ever feel that, oh, we're losing grip here or...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just after the Rochdale game, I was just... Remember just thinking like we have so got this, like this is like when you score on last minute winners and that, I just remember thinking that's, you always get told that's the hallmark of a successful team and stuff, and thinking of what we hadn't really got beat all season. Like any time it looked like we were going to get beat, we'd snatch a draw. Yeah, I know it probably came back, there was too many draws or whatever, but I just meant in terms of like the never give up and like go to the end kind of attitude.
We meet up with our old friends again, Portsmouth, in the playoffs. Not much was made about it being the smallest crowd of the season. It was still well above 26,000, but what a night that turned out to be. I mean, we really rose to the occasion if you think of how flat the season finished. I mean, by God, we didn't have to hit the game to them, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, I think if you ask any of the lads that played in that game, that was the most comfortable that we'd felt all season against just about any team. Like, we just kind of set up against them. And we obviously, by this point, we knew them so well. And we just kind of had this amazing feeling like we were never getting beat. Like, there was no way that they were going to score against us. What if you're getting that feeling as a team and there's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 of you with that feeling, that's a pretty special thing on a football pitch. And I remember just talking to the lads after the game and thinking like, if we're on it like that down at Fratton Park again, like these have got nothing against us because they probably looking at us as well, like probably the two biggest teams in the league in terms of fan base and history and stuff. And we sort of just came to the realisation. We're like, do you know, if we actually concentrate on ourselves and we're the better team, like we beat Portsmouth here. Like every time we play against them, if we focus on ourselves. So it was a pretty special feeling. And yeah, it was a bit bizarre having the lowest crowd of the season for the playoff, but it kind of G'd us up a bit because we were a bit like, oh, has everyone gave up on us a little bit?
Yeah.
As people like, huffed about the whole thing, like if they gave up on us, like so it kind of actually G'd up the players a bit. But you're not thinking it's 26,000 at all. Yeah. You're thinking like this is as good as we've played in all season.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, back to Fratton Park and the run up to the fixture. I'm not sure whether you know you were told to avoid all of the stuff, but some of the social media stuff from their actual official accounts was really, really kind of petty and small time. They're talking about Fortress Fratton Park and how we're all going to be in for the fright of our lives. And we know what it's like down there. It's always really tempestuous, scrappy game. And as we're seeing at Wickham, and as we're seeing with Josh Ginnelly down at Watford, you're certainly not afraid to give a back to anybody. But how, as a captain, do you ensure that everybody keeps their head in a game like that? Because it backfired big style on them, didn't it? They wanted to try to wind us up and wind us up, but it just did not work. And if anything, it backfired.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm sure that we've been told a few times they'd been doing it throughout the season. Like when we got beat down there in December, there was stuff coming out and what have you. And I think that that did spill over onto the pitch, because it was kind of like, well, like, what are you giving it? Do you know what I mean? You saw them to see it like as if they were trying to act as if they were like bigger and better than us at times. Just, it was just one of those where it was like, well, where's this coming from? So going into the game, as I say, because we had that much of a good feeling in the first leg, and I'm pretty sure it was the same team in the second leg.
Yeah,
we kind of just came up with a mindset of, obviously, as you say, Fratton Park is always an unbelievable atmosphere, and it's going to be a pretty special night here. They're 1-0 down. They're going to want to, you know, make it a nasty game, get the crowd going, and you know, get onto us. And we're just basically saying, don't give anything to G the crowd up, get their backs up. Do you know what I mean? Like, just sort of just play the game, play it how we did on whenever it was, Saturday or whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll be fine. I remember 5 minutes in, the ball goes out. I can't remember what happens. The ball goes out or whatever, and Christy McGuire starts like mouthing off to one of their fans or something. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is exactly what we don't want, man. Like, I know, like, he loves to play the villain and all that, and that's how he gets himself going. But I'm thinking, Christy, man, for the team, just leave it. Like, we don't want 20,000 Pompey fans going berserk now, wanting to kill us and G-ing their team up no end.
The funny thing is, though, the player they eventually pick on is, with all due respect to him, the softest and nicest lad in Luke O'Neill. He's getting kicked a bit like by the fans and that. I mean, what on earth's going through your head when you see that?
It was surreal. I think I was on the other side of the pitch when it was happening. But you're kind of looking at it and you're thinking, have I just seen that, right? Yeah. Someone just tried to like take a swing at him. But you're thinking, I don't know, it's a weird feeling when you're on the football pitch, because even though there's fans there, they can be like angry or whatever, and like it's a very emotional game, but you always feel like safe because you think, oh, everyone kind of knows
your boundaries,
the rules. Do you know what I mean? Everyone, like, can be a lot of anger and frustration, but you'd like to think everyone knows when to draw a line. Obviously, there's been incidents where that hasn't happened, but you kind of don't even think about that. Do you know what I mean? And then, obviously, Luke's fell into to the front row. You've seen what's gone on, and then you've seen a couple of our lads run over, and you're still thinking, that hasn't just happened. Like, what? As you say, the nicest guy ever. He's probably asking, like, being the most polite ever to get the ball or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably saying thank you and please about a million times. And he's just got a right hook for his cause. But, it's just disgusting. And to be honest, it not that we needed any more, but it was just kind of another one. Just be like, right, send these packing. These are doing our head in here. Like, like, fans, players, the loss. You're thinking, like, come on, let's end this once and for all, so I don't have to see Portsmouth ever again.
Well, thankfully, we did overcome them. And one of the major talking points from that evening was Grant Ledbetter, and we know, you know, him and his family, they're all Sunderland through and through. And it wasn't until a couple of days afterwards we were all made aware of the sad circumstances preceding the game. Now, I'll be honest, I can't even begin to imagine how he managed to drag himself through the game and deliver the performance he did. He was absolutely excellent. He is a man you want in the trenches with you on a night like that, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I think some of us were obviously aware a couple of days before the game of what he was going through, and you know, just for him to come down and pull on the shirt, and, as you say, put in that performance, was you know, that's just incredible strength there. And yeah, it was one of those at the end of the game, everyone just wanted to go over and hug him, like, not no one was even bothered about really what it meant about going to the playoff final or whatever, because, you know, if even though he was so sort of new into the group, he'd only came in January. He was obviously, he's a Sunderland boy. He's a top pro. He had an unbelievable career, and you know, everyone just wanted to do it for him, and everyone was just he obviously really wanted to do it and as well. So we had his back 100%. Whatever he chose to do, we would obviously have his back. And yeah, it was just incredibly emotional night again. And I think, as you say, for him to show that strength to play and put in that performance is testament to Grant. And he's, I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy the stuff that he's been through. But I think if there's ever a club that get behind a player and, you know, make him feel, you know, look after him, it's Sunderland. I think he's in good hands being at the club and with the fans and everything. I think you'd like to think he'll always have someone there for him when he needs it.
Absolutely. I'm sure I speak on behalf of absolutely everybody here, but the backing that he's got and when we're brought back to the club, it's a special thing. I mean, as you're aware.
It was absolutely beautiful. It was absolutely, yeah. It was, I remember looking at it and thinking, a lot of stuff that you hadn't been proud of at Sunderland over the last couple of years, you know, mm-hmm. You're thinking, what's the club doing? Blah, blah, blah. Various different things. But you're thinking of the whole Grant thing and everyone pulling together for that. And I thought, yeah, you know what? One of the times I've felt most proud about being part of Sunderland when all that was happening. So, no, it was a really good testament to everyone, really.
Absolutely. So back to Wembley again. Now, I'll be honest with you, this time the novelty had really worn off for an awful lot of people. The atmosphere was weird. You just got the feeling that nobody really wanted to be there.
It was weird.
I mean, look, we get the best help in hand. You see the most bizarre of own goals 4 or 5 minutes in. But what's the plan like then? Is it basically, you know, do we just say, right, let's try and see it out. We'll dig in deep like we did at Portsmouth, because we only really had a couple of half chances. And I think most people would probably feel the same. You think if we go for them here and we score a second, it's likely to be game over and their confidence is shot to bits.
Oh, absolutely. As you say, it was an absolute bizarre first 5 minutes because Max went off injured.
Yeah.
So there was a big delay for that. And then that own goal happens, the most bizarre own goal I've ever been involved in. And like all of a sudden we've only played 2 minutes, but it's been about 20 minutes and you're on the pitch. And you're thinking this is absolutely crazy. But that Charlton game was horrible. It just didn't seem like anyone could get going. It was it's never going to be from lack of trying or do you know what I mean? Like in a final, you don't need to motivate anyone or like tell them to work hard or anything like that. But I don't know. At the end of the day, I thought Charlton played really well as well.
They were the better side.
They were the better side. But knowing how we could play and what we'd put in recently, yeah, it was really disappointing. But it was weird. It was just such a weird atmosphere. Like the whole, we were in a playoff final and it was flat. We were flat as a team. Like the fans were flat. It, as you say, it was as if like no one wanted to be here, players or fans. And you're thinking, we didn't want to be here, but we've got one chance to get through in and, you know, make it a successful season. But then the goal obviously gets handed to us on a plate and we're 1-0 up. And you're thinking, well, the prayers are being answered here. Like we're getting given the win. But I don't know whether then that just freed up Charlton to think, we've got now to lose here. If we're conceding goals like that, it just kind of freed them up. And again, we weren't good at coming back from a bit of pressure at Wembley and turning the tide. But yeah, that was the game that I think everyone in the squad would be most disappointed at. Not even just result-wise, which was obviously gutter last second, but just performance-wise, we were just, I don't know what it was. As I say, like maybe it was the 20 minutes at the start having to make an early sub and the long delays just kind of like dragged it out a bit and like flattened us even more. But it's hard to put my hat on it. I've thought about it a lot over the months after it, but it would be hard to know what I would actually change if I had to go back and do it again. Obviously, you would like to think that you'd perform better, but there wasn't anything I could stick my finger on and be like, that wasn't right or that shouldn't have happened.
It's just a hangover that we haven't been able to shake off, really, isn't it, for such a long time?
Exactly. Even this day. Here we go again at Wembley, blah, blah, blah. And as you say, it was just a hangover. It was just like, it was just not a at no point was there a good feeling that weekend, I don't think, because I think everyone was just kind of like, oh, wish we had it wrapped up. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just the whole attitude to it wasn't great from us. And obviously that's going to cost you when Charlton are probably thinking, oh, you know, that's their first trip to Wembley. They're probably having the same buzz that we had for the Chequer trade. So, you know, if we're going into it feeling like that, then the other team are going to instantly have the upper hand.
Absolutely. Well, it's a day that I think we all hate reliving. And the summer itself was difficult because of a lot of uncertainty, you know, talks of players coming in, players coming out. But I'll be honest, George, what I still can't quite get my head around to this day. So pre-season starts, you start in the game at South Shields, but you then miss the trip to Portugal, and it's reported that it's an injury and there's no suggestion of anything more. I know Jack Ross had been out earlier in the week. He discussed how vital you were. You were remaining captain regardless of, you know, Grant being now back in the squad. So that at least tells me that you're, as always, going to be first name on the team sheet. But what kind of changes here? When are you made of Hull's interest? And were you at least given like a choice of staying, extending your contract? Or was it, you know, look, we've accepted a bid, it's kind of time to go? How did it all unfold?
So the thing with missing the Portugal and stuff was the last 3-4 months of last season, I was playing with this tendon injury in my knee. Yeah. And I came back. We were hoping that it'd sort of subside over the layoff in the summer. And then that wasn't the case. I played one game and then I trained like a couple of days after. I mean, knee basically like became really fat and painful. And it was a case of I need to go for a course of injections down in London to get that fixed. So the missing of the Portugal stuff was never anything to do with me eventually leaving the club. To be honest, it never even crossed my mind in the off season or whatever that I would leave Sunderland. It was almost come to the stage where I was thinking I would almost love to be like a one club player. Like if Sunderland could give me the chance, you know what I mean? If that was the case, like we never properly entertained that until I probably got to like 28, 29. But there was some thoughts like that where I was thinking, I'm already captain. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm in a good place here. But yeah, so obviously I only had 1 year left on my contract. And with the sort of whole takeover and stuff like that, I'm kind of thinking, right, no one said anything to me about my contract, but I'm taking it because there might be a takeover and stuff. They're waiting to see what happens with that. And then hopefully that it gets broached, but we'll just sort of sit tight. Like I'm not in any rush or what have you, but obviously I would like it sorted sooner rather than later. This is just all my thoughts.
Of course.
I'm not actually dialoguing with a club because like, it's kind of like a stubborn pride where you kind of want to be approached by them about a new contract. You don't want to like be like, oh, give me a new contract. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, I missed Portugal and I'm going through my course of injections or whatever. And I'm walking my dog on a Tuesday night. It's a nice evening, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think the lads are back from Portugal now, but I'm still not training. I'm not really doing much. I'm just kind of resting my knee, getting these injections in it. And I get a phone call from my agent just saying, oh, like Hull are interested in you. I was like, all right, okay. But you're kind of just like, you hear bits and pieces or whatever, and you're thinking, oh, right, okay, whatever. Like, it doesn't mean anything. They just kind of like let you know as a courtesy. I was like, all right, okay, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. I'll speak to you in a couple of days or whatever. And I never even really thought about it. And I was thinking, all right, okay, it's always nice to be wanted. But in my head, I'm thinking, right, hopefully if someone shows a bit of interest, that might trigger a new contract from Sunderland.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that was Tuesday night. And Wednesday lunchtime, I get a phone call. And it's Hull have put a bid in for you. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, that's went quick. Let us know what Sunderland's saying. Let us know what happens. Like, because obviously I've got 1 year left. Mm-hmm. Be like, well, surely this has got to trigger a new contract or what have you. And anyway, basically 2 hours later, it's that Sunderland have accepted the bid and my medical's the next day. And I kind of think, blimey heck. I haven't even said anything. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, well, is that it? Like, I was to meet agent, I was like, well, does that mean Sunderland aren't going to offer me a new contract or whatever? And they're like, no, they've accepted the bid. And that was basically it. In the space of 12 hours, I was then down in London and my medical were Hull. And it was all just kind of, in the space of 2 days, I went from not knowing anything, like just thinking about my season ahead with Sunderland, to then being a Hull player. It was all a bit surreal, like unbelievably quick. But yeah, I at some point I always kind of thought, oh, is Sunderland going to offer me a new contract here? And it just never came. And it was one of those where it was like, well, they've accepted the bid. Hull have offered me a 4-year contract. I've got 1 year left at Sunderland. They're not offering me anything. It's like, well, I can't really throw my toys out the pram here. It looks like they want to sell us. And it was one of those where I was speaking to my dad. I was like, well, what do I do? And he's like, well, it's clearly Sunderland want to sell you. So give up an opportunity to go to a championship club on a 4-year deal and then go back to a club and they're just trying to sell you. So I was like, well, it looks like I'm going to Hull then. So
there must have been a fair amount of disappointment though. I mean, for the club that you've been at since the age of 10, pretty much half of your life.
The most disappointing thing is that obviously Aidan had a terrific season last year, but at that point, Aidan had already signed a new contract and like he was 33 or something at the time. And I'm thinking I'm 24. I'm captain of the club. I've come through the academy. I was kind of in the impression, looking back on that, I was kind of like thinking, well, surely I could have been looked after by the club there, but wasn't to be. Obviously they got some money for me. So how much the club needed that money, I don't know. You hear all sorts of different rumors.
A long conversation for another day.
Yeah, but to be honest, it got to a point where I was in having my medical at Hull, and I started becoming. I just kind of had to change my mindset. And I was like, do you know what? I'm signing for a good club here in the championship. And then I just kind of had to, it's not easy, but sort of change my mentality and be like, this is an unbelievable opportunity here. Like I go have a good couple of years here, whatever, you never know what happens. So yeah, it was kind of, hey, I wasn't happy with how it ended. I can't lie, but that's how it was. So, you know, that's the business side of footy. That's the ruthlessness of it. But yeah, I went from a Tuesday night walk of the dogs, but not a care in the world apart from getting my knee sorted, to a whole plane in less than 48 hours. So all a bit bizarre, to be honest.
Are you still in touch with any of the lads at the club? Any of the players that you come through the academy with?
Yeah. Max, Duncan, Lyndon. Obviously keep in touch with the staff as well that are at the club. Like it was just bizarre. I just remember I drove to the Academy Light on the Wednesday to pick up my boots on the night, because I was going down from medical just to pick up my stuff, and that feeling of that could be my last drive to the Academy Light after I've been going there 4 times a week since I was 10, it was absolutely it gave me chills down my spine, but yeah. Oh, the everyone in there, it was just like my family. It was just like having an extended family. I just knew everyone so well and what have you. And it was obviously it's sad, but we're not gone anywhere. I've just changed club. Do you know what I mean?
Were you surprised to see Jack Ross let go a few months later? I mean, nobody does uncertainty really like Sunderland, but
yeah.
In terms of the original vision for a man who was a long-term project, you know, just kind of finding his feet. I mean, like I said about the hangover from last season, maybe that couldn't be shook off. But to me, I'll be honest, I was still really, really kind of puzzled and surprised at just how quick and out of nowhere it came.
Yeah. To be honest, I absolutely loved working under Jack Ross. I thought he was a brilliant coach, brilliant manager. So when I seen that he'd left, I just thought, what are Sunderland doing now? Like, I know that we had a sticky start and listen, it's a tough club when things start, the tide starts turning against you. What once sort of people start making their minds up, it's hard to sort of turn them round.
Yeah.
But just from previous experiences with different managers I've seen through the clubs for the last 15 years or whatever, obviously in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been more sort of, not hands-on, but more involved with them. But I absolutely love, and I absolutely love working with Jack Ross, and I think just about all the lads did as well. So when I seen that, I was upset because I just knew how much good stuff he was doing behind the scene and how much he had to, you know, do when he turned up. Like, people forget we had about 6 players at the start of last season, in pre-season, the first day back. And you're thinking, like, he's come into that from a couple seasons in the Scottish League, you know, after a team that's been back-to-back relegated. I know it's League One, but it's still, like, it's easy for a club just to drift and be an absolute non-event for years. So for him to turn that into a team where, you know, we got to 2 finals last year, and yeah, we win the top 2 to the last 7 games, and obviously we messed it up at the end. But I just think he did so much good stuff with the academy, with how he was as a man, how his training, everything. I just thought Sunderland were in really safe hands with him. I thought that's a manager that for 4 or 5 years, if they let him get the chance, he'll put the club on a really good track. But obviously, football's a fickle sport, isn't it? See,
isn't it just?
Yeah. It kind of just seemed like it was almost waiting to happen. It was like Sunderland would win a game. They just, from the outside looking in at this point, obviously I'm not at the club, but it was just, I was obviously following the results like Lost. I do closely, and the reaction, and you're thinking, it just felt like everyone was desperate for Sunderland to lose a couple of games and for him to get sacked. And it was just bizarre. What it felt like it was a ticking time bomb. You're thinking, come on, the amount of turmoil we've been through, surely we can stick by a manager for a few years, like, yeah, get a bit of a base going. Like, has history not taught us anything?
George, I know you're pretty much pressed for time, so just before I do let you go, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, you were at Sunderland for more than half of your life, and the turnaround of your transfer and never really afforded you the chance of a proper send-off or an opportunity, you know, to say goodbye, or the fans to say goodbye to you. So without putting you too much on the spot, can you just explain how much Sunderland Football Club and the fans mean to you and your family?
Well, it just feels like it is my family. I just don't, until the season, I never knew anything else. The training ground, the stadium was my home. It was all just, it's just always will be so special for me. The people that looked after me, from the staff, the academy, to then being in the first team, the fans that you'd see at every game, the fans that would stay outside the stadium, the staff at the stadium. The list goes on. I've got so much love for the people there, like, that will always be my club. I will always follow that club no matter what. And it was sad how it ended, but I will just forever be grateful for the kind of bringing up that Sunderland Football Club did to me. They raised me. They took me in as a 10-year-old kid, and I left 25-year-old man after having captained the club. If that's not the most amazing thing in the world, I don't know what is. So I will forever be grateful to the club for giving me all those opportunities, because it's just such a special club. And for me to do it at our club, it is something that I will never take for granted.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/news ad-free. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.